Igor. The cobwebs are not hung. The butcher knives are not sharpened. The wolfman needs a bath, and your mummy called all the way from Cairo. But you are busy. What gives, my little friend?
Meister, I am just so absorbed in the Nufi EVP, talking with the dead Nufiland e-book.
Well, the Halloween season is upon us, folks, and you can get your copy of Nufi EVP, Talking with the Dead of Newfoundland, on Amazon.ca at a very special Halloween discounted price. That's right, for $1, the price of a cup of coffee, you could be reading ghostly tales from all across Newfoundland.
Igor.
Yes, master.
What is a smartphone or a tablet?
Remember, folks, this deal is only available until midnight Halloween.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friend, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Hello out there in paranormal land. Welcome to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Halloween Special. You know, this time of year is very special to me. As a paranormal investigator and an author on the paranormal, I must say, this is kind of like Christmas to us, except a little bit more orange and black, so to speak. Big news. Lots of it. Gotta share now. Here I go. Life After Death Society invades Oz FM. The Life After Death Society will be investigating Stephanie O'Brien's house and revealing the findings live on today's hit music, Oz FM. Whatever you do, if you've been a supporter of myself and Robert Dumont and the Life After Death Society, do yourselves a big favor. Jump on our Life After Death Society Facebook page. Okay, get on there right now to stay up to date with what's going to happen. This is groundbreaking and truly is one of the biggest pushes into the media myself and Robert Dumont have ever made. I'm so proud to be part of the Life After Death Society right now as we take it to the next level. I can't even think of a way to make this Halloween any happier for yours truly. Later in the show, I will be joined by a couple of guests, but right now I am going to have to do what I always do at this time. And man, oh man, do we ever have some awesome news. Ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, going to have to say this, we are a little late for supper, so to speak, on this, as this did happen in July. It was July 27th and was published actually by ctvnews.ca. UFO over Toronto. Now, the reason why it's been so late coming out is a personal choice by myself because I wanted to wait for a few skeptics and whatnot to jump on there, but this story is still live on their website, so guess what? I'm going to go ahead with it. UFO over Toronto. Flashing lights confound sky watchers. Speculation is swirling on social media after strange flashing lights were spotted over North Toronto on Saturday night. North York residents took to Twitter to report the colorful lights moving in the Yonge Street and Sheppard Avenue area. Toronto police confirmed receiving some calls about the flashing pink, green, and white lights spotted at a single diagonal line. A video of the lights was posted on YouTube Saturday by Sarah Chun, who described what she saw as really bright orbital object, and it was glowing. Theories over what the lights could have been included Chinese lanterns, drones, a kite with lights attached, or UFOs. A North York resident named Alejandro told CTVNews.ca that he actually saw some kids in a park prepping a kite with a light rig attached on Saturday evening. After it got dark a couple of hours later, I noticed a line of lights, he said by email. It looked like a very potent laser pointing vertical in the sky, but it was the kite these people were preparing. Alejandro, who asked that his last name not be used, said he saw the lights starting to descend to the ground. Others speculated that the lights may have been flying lanterns that were released to mark the end of Ramadan. And a tweet from a Toronto police officer with the 32nd Division on Saturday night had some speculating whether the light was coming from a quadcopter. Officer Craig wrote, "I've been a police officer for 15 years. Tonight I have had my first report of a UFO, and I'm serious." You know, the one thing that really makes my paranormal investigator sense tingle here is the fact that the name of the person who tried to debunk this UFO sighting is it's not given. His name is Alejandro. Okay, maybe watching a few too Lady Gaga videos, but let's be honest with ourselves. If you are going to debunk these things, you should be from a credible source. You wish to remain anonymous, but why? I mean, I'd have no problem calling BS BS. Whether this is real or not, it is very strange for CTV.ca to actually report objects in the sky, let alone something that's been considered a UFO. Well, if you don't believe in UFOs, the fact that there might be life out there, then you probably believe in a creator. And you know, there's one thing I've always wondered. What happens to us after we die? Well, the first evidence of life after death apparently may have been found. An extensive new medical study has found tantalizing evidence that awareness may continue after we die. In the largest study of its kind, scientists at the University of Southampton examined more than 2,000 cases from hospitals in the US, UK, and Austria of people who have suffered a cardiac arrest before being successfully resuscitated. What they found was that in as many as 40% of the cases, the subject recalled maintaining some level of awareness during the period of time in which they would have been clinically dead. In one particularly interesting case, a 57-year-old man vividly recalled floating up from his body for 3 minutes while observing medical staff attempting to save him. He was later able to recall explicit details about what they had been doing and about the sounds that he had heard from them and heard around him. "We know the brain can't function when the heart has stopped beating," said study leader Dr. Sam Pernia. "In this case, conscious awareness appears to have continued for up to 3 minutes into the period when the heart wasn't beating, even though the brain typically shuts down within 20 to 30 seconds after the heart has stopped. A significant number of patients also reported the typical tunnel of light vision described during near-death experiences, as well as a sense of overwhelming peacefulness. Dr. Pernia believes that many more patients may experience such things, but are unable to remember due to the drugs or sedatives used by doctors during efforts to resuscitate them. You know, this is such an interesting part for me of the paranormal. The OBE, or out-of-body experience, is something that's been documented thousands and thousands of times. But in my opinion, it cannot be proven scientifically because the mere process is of life and death. UE cannot recreate death. We just cannot do it. Which means that the results of these examinations, we'll say, really are moot in the eyes of science because, well, the scientific method requires repeatability. If only we can die and come back, die and come back, die and come back, die and come back, and after 15 times in front of multiple scholars, only then would out-of-body experiences be scientific fact. Now, if you ask me, in my opinion, I do believe out-of-body experiences are just a quick glimpse as of where we are all heading to when we pass away. Speaking of heaven, I know someone who's got a heavenly voice. Or should I say voices? Well, you know, I'm going to be honest. This week, I read an article that blew me away. And when I watched the corresponding YouTube video, I just knew this lady deserved her spot today on the Odd to Newfoundland. German musician Anna Maria Heffel possesses the remarkable ability to sing two notes simultaneously. Known as polyphonic overtone singing, the incredible technique enables a gifted few to offer a singing performance in which two different sets of notes are played at the same time using nothing but the sound of a single person's voice. Now, as a classically trained singer, Heffalo is particularly adept at this technique and has been doing it for several years. A popular video uploaded to her YouTube channel shows her demonstrating this unique talent while explaining a little about how it works. This absolutely boggled my mind. When I heard this lady sing, I felt like it was two people singing. And it just shows that our beautiful world we live in still has many mysteries to it. I have never heard of this before, and I definitely feel it's odd. So I'm going to play Anna Maria here, Heffalil, actually singing those notes just for you. Listen really close, and you'll hear the bass, and then you'll hear almost like a whistle type singing voice on top of it. It's really neat. Just check it out. Isn't that amazing? My goodness. You know, I'm just taken by this wonderful German singer. I can't believe somebody can actually do this. It also lends a little bit to the old idea that perhaps even though we have our five senses, and our abilities, maybe there's more we can do. But because we have never seen a purpose to evolve, because we've become very successful the way we are now, perhaps our bodies kind of got lazy. Oh man, I can just see it now. I wonder what else we could really do that we don't know we can do. You know, maybe it's time we all took a hard look at ourselves and realized our true potential. UFOs over Toronto, the first evidence of life after death, and a woman who can sing with two voices at once. Every one of these stories, my friends, have been odd to Newfoundland.
Now time for tonight's special guest.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. I am here with my first special guest this week. Maybe the only one, we don't know yet, but definitely my first one. Adam Peddle is one half of Console Culture. Of course, his pal, his buddy, his confidant, we'll say. Barry Drover is the other half, of course. But Mr. Peddle is one half, in my opinion, the first ever well-known gaming podcast to come out of Newfoundland, Console Culture. He joins me this week to talk to me about the paranormal and creepiness in video games. Adam, how are you today?
I'm not too bad, John, my friend. How are you doing this evening?
I've never been better, and I'm so happy to have you on my show, Adam. I'm a big fan, and I'm encouraging anybody out there who is a fan of my show to tune into yours, as you and Barry, I'm sure, have another show just on the back burner ready to go.
Oh, well, yes, we do. We are at the tail end of some technical difficulties. We've been in a lull now, but we are looking at, in the next, say, 7 days, having a new, fresh episode posted and ready to go.
Now, how exciting is that?
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
I mean, I listen to these guys religiously. The reason why is because I am a big, avid game fan. I am, of course, a paranormal investigator, an author on the subject. I take it very seriously. But, you know, I love creepy and weird stuff, too. And when I think of the odd, the Newfoundland, I can't think of any odder than Adam Peddle.
Well, thank you very much. Coming from you, Mr. Mallard, I take that as a heartfelt compliment. And thank you very much again for the kind words about the show. Now, we tend to steer the show a bit more towards an adult audience. So, you know, no kids, you're definitely one you'd want to listen to after the kids are in bed. You yourself, man, you're doing great things, with the paranormal here with the podcast. I love it. I listen to it all the time, man. It's amazing. And like I say, it's cool that a group of us that through other means have known each other now. We've got these little offshoots, like we've got the guy who does the Who Story, and we've got you doing your paranormal. We've got myself and Barry and you know, Mike B, the Game Genie, and it's just all, we all know each other, and it's so cool that we're still connected, even though the reason we know each other is no longer applicable.
Well, I say this to anybody out there, and I do have a lot of old wrestling friends of mine who tune in every month to hear the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. We are all living, breathing proof that passion lives on even after the tights come off. And there's other things to get to. But we're not going to talk about us getting naked and talking about us removing our tights. We are going to talk about creepy, strange, bizarre, the paranormal in video games. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to jump in, Adam, with a story that's very dear to my heart. I am an avid role-playing game. Love it, love it, love it. Role-playing game aficionado, we'll say. I am in love with Super Nintendo RPGs.
You're not alone in that for sure. Locally, there's a huge market for that stuff. It's definitely not an affliction that you suffer alone, sir.
That's good. And, I also have a symptom that a lot of them don't have, though, my friend, and that's that I am unfortunately obsessed with turn-based RPGs. Unfortunate. But, well, I will say this. The world of RPGs have given me many wonderful things, Adam. I have had so many great adventures with so many wonderful characters, be they good or bad. But there's one thing that tops them all, and that would be the first time I ever conducted my first abortion.
I believe I know where this is going.
Well, So the story goes. Our first creepy and strange and odd tale is about an abortion in a video game. Yeah, that's right. The last boss, Gigas from Earthbound, is a very strange boss. Now, the storyline in the game actually is Ness, who's the main protagonist, and his friends have to go back in time to face Gigas when he's in his most vulnerable state. And that state, Adam, believe it or not, is when he apparently is a fetus before he was born. You chop in actually a little bit of graphics of the screen where you actually walk up to face him, and it looks like a child coming out of a vagina. Yeah, and then you actually see the screens, because this game doesn't have any animation during the fight scenes. The screens are animated in this. It's all backgrounds, and there's no doubt about it, Mr. Petal. You can see, plain as day, that Gigas truly is a fetus.
Yeah, it's like they pasted it on their desktop and set it to tile. It's just the same image sort of repeated over and over. I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
And you add in some flashing lights and it going back and forth and some of the creepiest game music I've ever heard in my life, which is just bizarre, and you got yourself one creepy, strange boss battle. Earthbound itself is rich in paranormal. It's pretty much all throughout the game. You're fighting aliens, you're fighting monsters, you're fighting all kinds of different animals that are of paranormal nature. There's even a haunted part of the game where there's actually a town called Threed, and the whole town is overrun by zombies. So the game is quite Halloween-y in itself. It's a masterpiece, no doubt. But I tell you, that last boss battle, it's just strange. And to stir the pot a little more for the religious fanatics out there, you beat this boss by praying. So you beat the abortion by praying. That alone should pretty much break your brain,
wow,
right? Oh, man.
And this is, and like you said earlier, this is the Super Nintendo era. This is, you know, the mid to late 90s.
That's right.
Can you imagine if something like that, like if even if they tried to sneak it through today?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think something like that would actually make it onto a physical media or a download that you could play to this day? That's so strange to me.
Well, not really, because I just finished the South Park RPG actually on network, and you do perform actual abortions in that game, and so be it. It actually is a turn-based RPG. Wow. Will they get away with it? Yes, but only if it's...
What was that?
Will they get away with it by putting in a game? Yes, but they'd have to rate it, God knows, the highest rating could possibly get.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, you know, Earthbound is one of those, you know, in the realm of video game collectors these days, Earthbound is one of the most expensive Super Nintendo games there is.
Guess who owns a box copy never opened?
Oh, really?
Yeah, guess who has a vacuum-sealed gamer guide?
Oh, guess who has about $400 worth of paper and plastic and silicone?
Guess, never know. Tell you what, if I find a good cause and I dig it out of the attic in my parents, well, not my parents' attic, their basement, if I can dig it out of that, maybe I'll put it up for auction someday and we'll make a few bucks.
Oh, yeah, you do fantastic. but it's one of those things that people have always said, oh, and when it was released, it never really had that big of a following. But it's sort of, you know, in everybody's retrospect, it's one of those games that's always to the forefront, and now it's become so, you know, wanted that the price on it for a used copy is skyrocketed. And it's always been because of the gameplay I hear a lot. I've never actually played it myself. And as you mentioned, the music. The music for Earthbound is a myth in itself.
I will tell you this much. Earthbound is probably the first game I ever played it as, you know, younger, where I literally was so absorbed with it where I would not answer the phone, I wouldn't eat, I laughed and I cried along with the characters, and that's really what made that game so special to me. There's people out there who cannot stand Earthbound, and there's some people out there who really are in love with it. Let's say they're part of the Happy Happiest cult, and anybody who's a fan of that game will get that joke for sure.
Cool.
Tell me something about a creepy game that you're familiar with, Adam.
Oh, okay, well, one of the ones that I've always really, really liked ever since I became first aware of this story was the story of back in the I believe it was the mid to late 1970s. There was a rumored arcade cabinet of a game called Polybius. Mm-hmm. If you're into retro gaming, this game was an awful lot like the game Tempest, a lot of flashing lights, polygons. The rumor was that this machine was actually used to mind control people, and the game was causing people seizures and causing fights and causing all this aggressive behavior centered around this machine. Rumor has it, again, none of this has been substantiated in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, the internet these days, there's fake images, but no one has ever been able to produce a real image of the Polybius arcade cabinet. It does have a bit of an air of truth to it, through that Atari was actually contracted with the U.S. military around that time to create simulations for the purpose of training soldiers. So like there was rumors that this machine caused aggressive behavior in otherwise non-aggressive individuals around the machine. There were also rumors that once a week, Men in Black, you know, the proverbial Men in Black, would come and empty machine and make certain adjustments to it. And it's just one of those things that, even though it's never been substantiated, could this actually be out there?
I do remember some pictures online I've seen of that. Actually, one's from The Simpsons, where you see Bart Simpson in the arcade, and Polybius, of course, is right next to him, gaming console.
You are correct.
Also, there is a great deal of research gone into military, parapsychology in the military in particular, and what we call a Manchurian candidate. Now, a Manchurian candidate is somebody who has a mental trigger inside their brain, basically, that can be set off by a certain music, word, trigger of any sort, could be a smell. And due to this person being brainwashed, basically, they turn into an ultimate killing machine with no remorse. So we better be careful who we let play these machines, my friend.
Flashing lights and patterns have always proved that they can have strange effects on a human being.
Oh, yeah. And there's none. Oh, absolutely. And I tell you, speaking of which, I can think of another game right now that might be responsible for more illness and suicides than a lot of other games. Because, I mean, you can tell just by the look in those soulless dark eyes that Pikachu is definitely the devil.
Oh, 115% positivity rating, sir.
I'm pretty sure if you reverse the word Pikachu, it would say, kill your appearance.
Yes.
Back in 1996, the Pokemon Red and Green video games delighted Game Boy owners all over the world. Well, except for one part of the world, and that, of course, would be Japan. The game was first released in Japan and is supposedly correlated with a huge spike in suicides and illness in children ranging from age 7 to 12. Now, this all came about in a part of the game called Lavender Town. And this horrible, horrible background music Adam is playing, and I'm telling you right now, I'm going to take a big risk. You know what it is? I'm going to take a big risk right here, right now on air.
Are you going to attempt to invoke mass Lavender Town syndrome, John Mallard?
I'm going to try to cause the biggest riot in Odd Newfoundland paranormal podcast history. I am going to play the Lavender Town theme. You feeling anything yet?
Nope. Hold on a minute. I gotta go kill my cat.
I feel like I kind of wanna go underneath my sink and get the bottle of Drano and just unclock my life. Okay. I need a second to compose myself.
That was tense stuff, John. That was tense.
Dude, I'm telling you right now, you know, all 100 people who listen to my podcast are now dead.
it's really not good to induce mass suicide in your listeners.
Well, how about we cure it? You know, there's a fellow by the name of Kazumi Totaka, and he is the king of the Easter egg. This guy has managed to put... Now, he's actually a music composer, okay? He's done a lot of work with various games. And he actually has this thing where he likes to hide a calling card, so to speak. Okay?
Okay.
I thought this was kind of weird. I don't think it's creepy by any means, but I think it's kind of strange that someone would do this. Okay? Kazumi Tataka's song is a short 19-note tune hidden in almost every game he has worked on as a composer. It was first discovered on the title screen of Mario Paint, which led many people to refer to it as the Mario Paint song, and was thought to be the earliest instance of a song in a game hidden. It was later discovered in the Game Boy game X, released only in Japan, which predates Mario Paint by months, which means that this was actually planned. It has also been discovered in many other games, including Animal Forest and Animal Crossing, Animal Crossing City Folk, Animal Crossing E-Reader Cards, Animal Crossing Wild World, Animal Crossing New Leaf, Kero no Tami Nikana Wanaro, good lord, I definitely pronounced that wrong, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, and the DX version. It's in Luigi's Mansion, a very haunted game in itself. Nice. Mario Artist, Talent Studio, Mario Paint, Pikmin 2, Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins, Virtual Boy Wario Land, X, Escape, Yoshi Touch and Go, Yoshi's New Island, and Yoshi's Story. So he's pretty much put this wonderful little song.
Wow.
Yeah, in all these games.
That's impressive.
It's actually, no matter what anybody say, I'm pretty sure, I'll go on the record and say this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it is the most common Easter egg ever devised. It's in so many games.
Well, I know you said a couple of the games there. Now, I'm not familiar with this at all. Like, this is a whole new story for me.
Okay, well.
But I'm thinking now, because you said Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins. It's in that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've played that a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. So I probably heard it. I just haven't been able to identify it as such. Now, well, so obviously, as soon as this is over, I'm going to YouTube and going to find this and look it up. Because
Adam, I don't want to ruin it for you, but I'll give you a hint. You're only going to find it if you're dead as a doornail. Okay? Now, in the meantime, to offset our horrible Lavender Town song I played earlier, how about we actually take a listen to Kazumi Tataka's hidden Easter egg song, his song. I'm going to play the version from Mario Paint, so you hear the title music in the background, and then you'll hear it start in, okay?
Okay, cool.
Check it out. There's not much to the melody, but it's pretty much this guy's signature, and to me, that's very odd to have in any video game. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it's a cool way to get your signature in there. I mean, back in the days of Atari 2600, basically what the game designers would do is they'd hide, like, their initials somewhere in the game. You had to go through a certain process in order to get there, and once you got there, then, okay, you found the Easter egg. But that is a really cool little way to sort of sign off on your work. That's cool. I really like that concept.
Well, Adam, think about when you were on your romantic conquest as a very young man, and, you know, you'd be out on a date with a hot chick, and, you know, you'd probably write, you know, Adam Petal loves, I don't know, Barry Drover, and put your heart on the side of the wall, and you kind of make your signature, right?
Well, he is my hetero life mate. Well, so yeah.
Yeah,
I absolutely. Know. Okay, yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Maybe this is his little way of making a love letter to all of his fans who love his music.
Yeah, it's possible. It's just a really cool artistic way for a musician to sign his work. I really, really like that story, John. I'm really glad you turned me on to that, and I can't wait to research it more.
Hopefully Barry get a chance too, and you know, he's gonna have a lot of fun trying to crack that. You just got about 20 games too where there's Easter eggs, and you know you're looking for, but man, oh man, are they ever hard to find.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, a lot of those Easter eggs are actually wait and seek on Easter eggs. You don't find them in the game. You have to wait at certain points. So it's very tedious and hard. Oh, thousands of possibilities. And the fact that people actually look for these and find them, somebody deserves a prize.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Come on, man. Hit me up with another creepy and strange video game story.
All right. This is probably one of the weirdest ones I've heard. And to be honest, I'm not real familiar with the source game itself, because unlike you, a professed RPG fanatic. I, sir, have not received that gift. I don't like role-playing games at all. At all. But this one is about an old Nintendo 64 game that many, many video game fans will be familiar with. The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Mm-hmm.
And of the RPGs, and I'm sure this is no surprise to you, you've heard me say this before, and I'm sorry if this costs you listeners. I hate Zelda.
Dum, dum, dum!
Every fiber of my being do I hate the Zelda series, with one exception being the Four Swords Anniversary Edition that Nintendo gave me on my 3DS a couple of weeks or months ago or whatever. But this Majora's Mask that I'm talking about, the legend goes by the name of Ben, B-E-N, Drowned. And the story goes that a kid named Ben loved the Zelda series and loved this Majora's Mask game. Unfortunately, the kid named Ben drowned. His game somehow, I guess his parents sold it at a yard sale or whatever. The game made its way out around. And when a man went to buy a Nintendo 64 at a used video game store and he was looking for Majora's Mask, the guy just gave him the Nintendo and the Majora's Mask because of all the complaints he'd had from all the other customers. And it turns out, apparently, this Ben drowned this one Majora's Mask cartridge is actually what they call a haunted cartridge. It behaves completely different than every other cartridge in the game. You know, you get weird laughs and creepy voice messages at points in the game when you're, you know, quote-unquote not supposed to. And there's actually video on YouTube of this game being played.
Wow. Well, just remember, Adam, you know, my background, of course, in the paranormal realm is what we call electronic voice phenomenon, okay? And that is best defined as voices captured on recorder or recording device that should not be there. So maybe what you're actually getting is ITC, which is instrumental transcommunication, okay? Maybe this game could very well have a spiritual attachment. Maybe, just maybe, this haunted game is trying to communicate with the gamers. I'm telling you right now, this game would sell millions, millions, millions of copies if they can get this redone and done properly and sell it at Halloween. Who wouldn't want to sit down and play Haunted Majora's Mask?
Oh, I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't.
I want to right now. Totally want to.
Yeah, actually, I meant to tell you about that. When you had my brethren, Buck and Scott on, and you went and did the EVP.
Mm-hmm.
I almost went with them that night.
You know, it's interesting, Adam, actually, I had Buck on the show, before we went out and invited him and his woman, and, they didn't want, she couldn't go apparently, but, I actually took him and, yeah, him, the Scotch brothers basically, took them, to Cape Spear, and I'm telling you right now, man, like, I thought we were going to have a little bit of fun. I didn't think we were going to capture anything at all, like, solid. To be honest with you, I've been to Cape Spear about almost close on 20 times now, ghost hunting. And, man, oh, man, that EVP, that Adam EVP we caught,
yeah,
was so strange.
You know how flipped out I would have been if I had been there?
I know, I was thinking about that.
After the fact, like, I am never going to Cape Spear again. I don't care how close to England it is.
Well, Adam,
yeah, that's some creepy stuff, dude. Like, as soon as Buck told me that, and then you, of course, messaged me, and I watched the video, and I was like, dude, I would have, wherever it was where you listened to that and heard it the first time, there would have been two dead Adams, because I'd have dropped that.
Well, to be honest, we actually reviewed that in the car. You know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, Buck and Scott had a great time, but I also want them to have the feeling of what it was like to be a paranormal investigator. And, you know, not only did they get to go down the tunnels and have a bit of fun, they sat back and actually heard that in the car right in the parking lot before we left. There was no way I could have, not saying that I would ever tamper with evidence, but I wanted to show them that this stuff really does exist. There really is electronic voice phenomena. And you know what? There very well could be a haunted Majora's Mask cartridge out there somewhere. Does it make your heart beat?
It's beating like crazy, and it feels like it's in a place it completely shouldn't be.
Adam, I'm telling you right now, there's also a heart that shouldn't be somewhere, too, and it's in Grand Theft Auto 4. The Statue of Liberty's secret. Oh, man. The Statue of Liberty's secret. Now, because the game world is so vast, you can almost never fully explore all of it. Grand Theft Auto series is full of bizarre urban legends in itself, okay? You know, we've heard about Bigfoot wandering around, or Leatherface, or the ghost of CJ's mom, or that CJ is actually a woman under his armor, or something like that. but the one thing that really struck me with Grand Theft Auto 4 was an Easter egg. You can only get to it by helicopter. You fly to the top of the Statue of Happiness, I believe it's called. And as you go up there, you land and you find a small plaque, and it says "No hidden content this way," which is pretty much just a big hint. And not only that, I mean, if you look at the face on the Statue of Happiness, it is freaking creepy in itself. Like, it's creepy looking. But the really wild thing is that once you go inside this door, inside the Statue of Happiness, which is supposed to be the Statue of Liberty in this game, is a gigantic, full-scale, beating heart.
And inside a statue.
Inside a statue, dude. That is creepy.
The biggest part and the coolest part, I think, about that is the "no hidden content this way." It's like a 1960s Batman episode.
You were going to find a way to segue to Batman.
Just can't get rid of a bomb.
I need to turn you up a little bit, my man. Yeah, I know one, like, when I play games and stuff like that, you know, Easter eggs are always fun, but, like, I'm the kind of guy who doesn't really hunt them down. Like, I'm more of a stumble across it, if it happens, cool kind of guy.
I'm more of a go on YouTube and search video game Easter eggs kind of guy.
Yeah, it's
worth it. If I want to see them, because, you know, I get in these little spurts, and, you know, I guess you could say just little tiny obsessions, you know, to last a week, you know, like epic rap battles of history, or, you know, one week it was plate tectonics, just every week something different grabs me, and I'll just go and learn about it.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, we live in an age where there's so much information, we just grab it out of air. And, yes. You know, when I think...
It's a wonderful, wonderful time we live in. It really, really is.
And, you know, I'm back on the subject of what we were talking about with the gaming. You know, I find gaming as a distraction, but sometimes it just plays right along with the chords of your life as well. I truly believe there's a game out there for everybody. And,
I think so, too. I think that, you know, with such broad strokes, like, it might not be necessarily be something that's the most recent generation. It might not be the most expensive system, but I guarantee you, over the course of video game history, there is certainly something out there for everybody. No matter what your beliefs are, no matter what you enjoy, there are different types of games that everybody can enjoy. I firmly, firmly believe that.
And, you know, Adam, another thing, too, like, when I talk to people about gaming and stuff like that, you know, we always kind of go back to our history, to things we remember. And now that I think about it, the majority of the games we've played have been full of murderers, have been full of monsters and creepy stuff. And, like, pretty much every game has a ghost in it. And I'm wondering, you know, could it have been me, you know, playing Simon's Quest as a kid, or running away from the booze in Super Mario as a child, that maybe steered me on the paranormal course to being an investigator. I wonder if that could have been it.
you know, that's cool, though. Like, it's something paranormal. It's something I've always had an interest in, but not obviously to the level you have. But it's just something, even as a kid, you know, I used to read a lot. I used to do a lot of creative writing. And it's true what you said. There was always that mythical, magical, paranormal element that you could use to make it interesting, and to weave a little element of truth into things. Is really cool, I must say.
Absolutely. You know, Adam, I hate to shamelessly plug myself, but I have to do it at this point. As you know, I have put a new book out there a little while ago, at the end of August, called Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland, edited, of course, by our mutually good friend, Steve Lake.
Uh-huh.
And this book has just taken off. It's done so well. It was a bestseller. Excellent. It was a bestseller in its first week, so I'm very proud of that. Not bad for a non-unknown indie writer from Newfoundland.
Yeah.
You know, putting my experiences on paper was just so difficult and trying, and I'm so glad people responded quite well to that book. But in between video games, we all read a few good ones, eh?
Oh, yes, for sure, for sure. When I was a kid, you know, every night I'd make sure I went to bed with a book. I must have read, Beverly Cleary, Super Fudge like 100 times, and Charlotte's Web, and you know, all the classics.
And, you know, one thing that I've actually heard you say on Facebook, you were talking about a book called GIF?
No, the book that I used, when I was a kid, I went to St. Teresa's School here in St. John's, and, in the St. Teresa's Library, they had this book, and the book was, you might be familiar with it if you were in that system and went to the libraries. There was a whole bunch of them. There were tall, thin, white cover books, and there was like ghosts and you know, pirates, and all, just each one had its own individual topic. And the one about ghosts, the only reason I used to bring it back to the library was to take it out again. I loved this book. And in this book, is one of the stories that spawned my interest and, you know, just sort of kept my imagination. Even now, you know, 25 years after the fact, as soon as I was coming on your show, I said, we have to talk about Geth. And what Geth is... Geth is from this book. It's a story of a talking mongoose, a purported talking mongoose. And apparently this mongoose was mischievous, you know, used to just run around the old farmhouse. No one ever really saw him. There was questionable pictures and stuff like that. But it was just the story of, well, number one, at that time I had no idea what a mongoose was. Not a clue. I was like, what the hell is a mongoose? Turns out it's like a ferret or a weasel.
Yeah, they actually eat snakes. It's really fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, like, apparently the family that he lived with used to, like, talk to him through the walls and stuff. But if you look at the Wikipedia link that I sent you earlier, I was hoping you might be able to identify some of the investigators that they name who actually investigated this GIF story.
Okay, hang on, let me check it out, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so Wikipedia. By the way, by using the Wikipedia, everything is still not of sound mind. You're actually allowed to quote Wikipedia on podcasts because it's not 100% factual.
Oh.
Even though, in my opinion, most of it is.
Yeah.
So you can go ahead and say Wikipedia, Wikipedia, just, Wikipedia, just and they can't sue you.
Just as long as it supports my...
GIF the mongoose?
He has a Wikipedia page, man. It's got to be true.
Oh, my God. Wow. Okay, straight up, I just went and checked this out, and oh my God, this is real. Okay, so you said there's actually investigators. Hang on, let me check it out.
Yeah, one was Harry Price, I think.
Okay, paranormal investigator Harry Price with okay. Now, Harry Price, this is a long time ago.
Yeah, it was like 1800s.
Yep. Now, Harry Price, actually, he's written about, but only because he's a very unfortunate fellow. He's actually had a lot of hoaxes put around him, and they got popular, unfortunately. Another thing, too. But as for that, I'd never heard of these guys before, probably because it's so goddamn long ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then, these guys are probably more popular in the States, but I'm pretty sure I heard Price's name before. So, that's actually really interesting. I don't really study a whole lot of, paranormal investigators, from less than probably 30 years ago.
Oh,
and
okay.
And the reason why is because it's a completely different field now. There's a lot less spirituality and a lot more science, and you know, it's different. But God, you know,
Harry Price didn't have a USB microphone, John.
He never, man. This guy worked probably with, like, I don't even know what the hell they had back then. I guess they had a horrible, like, recording, like, just
some sort of big metal cone they put up to the ear or something.
I'm pretty sure it was just pretty much like a record player of some sort.
Yeah.
But I keep thinking back to like the Flintstones and like where they got like the bird and just puts its beak down on the record and plays it like that long ago. But no, never really rang a bell, to be honest with you. Unfortunately for me, but hey, something for me to look into. That's pretty funny. A talking mongoose, man. Of course you remember that. That's just so bizarre.
Yeah, and it was also that book that told me, like, taught me what a poltergeist was and how a doppelganger worked and all kinds of cool little stuff. To this day, man, like I say, I read that book enough that after 25 years, you know, six or seven of it spent as a professional wrestler, you know, I've had my share of concussions in my life, and that is a piece of information. That and the code to get the Mike Tyson and punch out are sure that if I were to get Alzheimer's and forget everything else in my life, those two pieces of information would still be rattling around in there.
You know, we always try to beat our personal best at him at Mike Tyson's punch out. Some people hold records at him.
Oh, some do.
Some people are second best at him, but some people will be first someday.
Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm really, really trying. The secret is that there's two boxers I can't get in the first round, and that's Mr. Sandman and Mike Tyson. The rest of them, not a problem. But the thing with Mike Tyson is, in order to get him in the first round, it's completely random. There's like one in every 80 games you're actually able to do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's kind of weird. Why would they design that? Oh. Looks like we're back on topic again with strange and weird video games. Thank God. Again, why the heck would they program a game like that?
I don't know, man. It's one of those things, like, everybody loves Link and Zelda. I find Link and Zelda and all those RPGs to be so hard. I just can't wrap my head around them. The first time I ever played Punch-Out, did you ever see the movie A Beautiful Mind?
Yep.
And you see how all the mathematical equations are just flashing out, and he knows what to do. That's how I was with Punch-Out. There was no problem. I just understood. You know what I mean? And it's kind of hard to have that connection with any other game.
Oh, man. And you know, there's one thing I love to do when I'm doing my podcast, that's laugh hysterically into the microphone, because, you know, at the end of the day, I take my paranormal research really, really, really serious, Adam. But I find the Odd the Newfoundland is my way of venting my steam and having a little bit of fun. And man, oh man, have we ever had fun tonight. But unfortunately, it is time to go. We are well into almost we're over a half hour, an hour, or close on 40 minutes. So that's wonderful, man. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of this. And, you know, I'm going to give you a minute to kind of promote yourself and where people can hear about you, okay? Because I think that's really important, because I'm sure as many paranormal fans as I have on my Facebook and on my, you know, Podbean and Stitcher and iTunes and all that, I bet you there's a lot of gaming fans on there as well. So why don't you tell them all where you can be found to, okay?
Well, first, I want to say thank you so much for having me. Ever since you started doing this show and, you know, after interacting with you at Sci-Fi on the Rock, it's been something I've been really, really looking forward to do. And I thank you so much for the opportunity, man. I really appreciate it. Now for my shameless plugs. If you want to catch the console punch culture.
You still thinking about Punch-Out? Did you hear that,
yeah,
folks?
I am. If you want to catch console culture, you can check us out, consoleculture.podbean.com. We are also available, as with the Odd the Newfoundland, we are on Stitcher, iTunes, and we're also available on a weekly basis, Friday afternoons at 2 o'clock local time. That's at Newfoundland Standard Time, at www.radiofubar.com.
Pretty awesome. And
you can send us on Twitter at ConsoleCulture or ConsoleCulture@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook. Basically, all the social media. Google us. We're the first thing that pops up.
There you go. And, you know, I believe there should be many things for people to visit. And, you know, I've got two Facebook pages, actually, myself. The Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast page and the Life at an Ex Society Lads page.
Yep.
I post all my stuff on both of those pages. So people are going to be able to see this podcast and hopefully check out your stuff too. Did you hear that? To my loyal fans out there who listen to the Odd the Newfoundland, check out Adam and Barry. Don't let your kids listen to it because they curse like sailors.
Yes, we do.
It is an awesome show.
And thank you so much for having me.
All right.
And with that, I do say goodbye. I look forward to talking with you once again. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.